Parshat Vayetzeh. Tuesday nights, we're doing Parsha Summary. Vayetzeh Yaakov Miderach Sheva. Sheva. Our Parsha begins with Yaakov's leaving. Yaakov leaves the city of his fathers, the city of Be'er Sheva. We had seen that Yaakov got the blessings from his father, the blessings to be a continuation of the blessings of Abraham. Abraham was promised the Holy Land, and that blessing was given over to Yitzchak. And now Yitzchak gives that blessing over to Yaakov. Yaakov, according to tradition, spent 14 years learning in the Beit Midrash of Shem Be'Evel, and then he goes out to head to Haran. Vayetzeh Yaakov, Yaakov goes out. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, "Eveh golel inkom Torah." A person has to sometimes, not sometimes, the Mishnah seems to say a person should always go to Galut, should distance himself from his hometown in order to learn Torah. You can understand that the Mishnah is saying even if you have to leave your hometown, but the Tiferet Yisrael seem to understand that this is a general rule. You want to learn Torah, you have to go away. You're with the kids you grew up with, you're with your friends and the family, everyone expects you to continue the way you are, the way you were. And in order for a person to grow, he has to get rid of those limitations. He has to be free to develop the way he feels is right. And the same thing we might find true with Yaakov, even though Yaakov is very old now, he could be 74, he's an old man, he's not married, now he's going to build his family. And Vayetzeh Yaakov min Be'er Sheva, the whole story of Yaakov is going to develop in our parsha. Yaakov is going to build the 12 tribes, Yaakov is going to get married, and it all begins with Yaakov's leaving, he leaves his hometown. He's going to his uncle. He's going to his uncle, and we know his uncle is a sly person. On the way, he comes to the Temple Mount. He comes to the place where Yitzchak was offered, Har Moriah, and he institutes the prayer of Arvit. Now, he comes to pray to God, Vayifga b'makom, comes to pray to God, and suddenly it's nightfall. It seems like he was ready to pray, even though it wasn't nightfall. So Yaakov is coming to institute the prayer of Arvit, and it seems like he's ready to pray the prayer of Arvit.
No, pray, by day.
Arvit, Yaakov is Arvit. Yitzchak did mincha. Vayetzeh Yitzchak lasuach lasadeh lifnot arev. Yitzchak went before nightfall. That's mincha. Yaakov.
No, he was going to do mincha, but because it became dark fast.
Yaakov came to institute the prayer of Arvit. When do we pray Arvit? So the Gemara says that the three prayers we pray during the day correspond to the offerings that were given in the Beit HaMikdash. The morning began in the temple with the Olat HaBoker, the special offering that was given every morning, including Shabbat, including Rosh Chodesh, including Yom Kippur. Every day of the year, the day began with a special offering that was totally burnt for God. That's the Olat Tamid Sheshachar, Tamid meaning constant, Tamid of the morning. And the day ended in the afternoon, 2.5 hours before sunset, they would bring the Tamid Shebin Albaim. And the prayer of Mincha corresponds to that. Now, just one second, the prayer of the Tamid Shebin Albaim could be brought till nightfall. But they would customarily bring it 2.5 hours before nightfall. And that time is called Mincha Ktana, those last 2.5 hours. Because by then they would customarily bring the second Tamid. Now, what happens with the parts of the Korban that haven't yet been burnt? So they slaughter the animal, they do the sprinkling of the blood, they do everything they're supposed to do, and then you have pieces of meat that have to be burned. You have pieces of fat that have to be burned. So that doesn't have to be burned by day. Offerings we only bring by day. But those fats, the rest of the animal, the burning of the animal on the altar, that could go on all night. And that's called akavat imurim, akavat chalavim, bringing forth on the mizbeach the fats and the rest of the animal that remained. So that could happen all night. The slaughtering, the sprinkling of the blood, the rest of the procession had to take place by day. Now our prayer of Arvit corresponds to the burning of those fats, the burning of the remainder of the sacrifices that were sacrificed during the day. And the prayer of Arvit was instituted by Yaakov.
I wasn't talking about him wanting to institute the mincha. Obviously it was instituted by Yitzchak. But I read in Midrash that he came to pray mincha, which was already instituted, but because it became dark so fast, he ended up praying Arvid.
Could be. What I said is a Yerushalmi that's quoted by Tosfos and Brachos, and the Aruch HaShulchan quotes La Halacha in the beginning of the laws of Arvid. Could be there such a marriage,
daytime.
I don't know.
Because it was still daytime, he came, and it became night, so then he had no choice but to pray.
Yeah, yeah. Arvid. Our sages learn that the Pasuk says he came to pray, Kiva HaShemesh. So our sages, the Medrash learns that Kiva could be understood as two words, like it's written, because the sun came, the sun set. Our sages understood that it's also a Lashon as though it were one word. Kiba, put out. Kibuy is to put out a fire. So God put out the sun, so to speak. The sun was supposed to remain out for another hour or two, and God put it out. But the Yerushalmi that we mentioned before learns that he was going to pray Maariv early. He was going to pray Maariv in the late afternoon.
In the day.
So this brings us to Machlokas in the Gemara. The Gemara records a Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. How late can one offer the Mincha offering? So we said that customarily they'd bring it 2.5 hours before sunset. But how late could one do it if he has not yet brought it by then? So Rabbi Yehuda says, well, those 2.5 hours at the end of the day, you could go halfway. You could go to Plaga Mincha. Half of that period you could bring the Mincha offering. And corresponding to the Mincha offering, half of that period, meaning an hour and a quarter into that 2.5 hour period, which is an hour and a quarter before sunset, until that point you could pray Mincha, just like you could offer the afternoon sacrifice till that point. Chachamim say no, you could offer the Mincha, the Tamid of the afternoon, could be sacrificed till nightfall. Till the night you could bring the sacrifice, and corresponding to that you could bring Mincha till nightfall. What's the halacha? So the Gemara says we don't know what the halacha is. The Gemara says you could go this way, you could go that way. The only thing is you shouldn't do both at the same time. I mean, you shouldn't say I'll pray Mincha late, I'll pray Mincha 2 minutes before sunset or 10 minutes before sunset because I'm going like Chachamim, that you could pray Mincha till nightfall. And then a minute later, before sunset, you say, now I could pray Alvit, because Rabbi Yehuda says you could pray Alvit from an hour and a quarter before nightfall. Now, let's not get confused. This is regarding the prayer of Alvit. It doesn't mean that Shabbos ends then. It doesn't mean anything other than that the sacrifices were brought during these times, and the prayers corresponding to these sacrifices could be said at these times. So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could pray Mincha until an hour and a quarter before sunset. That's called Plaga Mincha. And from that point on, you could pray Alvit. According to Chachamim, you could pray Mincha until nightfall. And from that point on, you could pray Alvit. When is nightfall? Is nightfall the Shkia, or is nightfall Tzeta Kochavim? Ordinarily, we say nightfall Tzeta Kochavim. The Yekis have, and the Sfardim have, and many congregations have the custom to pray Mincha till sunset. And then right after sunset, they pray Alvit. They don't wait till Tzeta Kochavim. What's this based on? So there's a long discussion trying to figure out what is this based on. The Rishonim, the Gorim, everyone discusses it. And one of the sources they bring for it is this Midrash that we just said. That Yaakov was coming to pray at night. He was coming to pray in the late afternoon Alvit. And suddenly, turned night. That means he was ready to pray Alvit in the late afternoon.
It's more like he would, because it's two hours... Earlier, it's not an hour earlier.
The Medrash quotes a number. The Medrash says it was 2 hours before the sunset.
That would be like Rabbi Yehuda.
That would be like Rabbi Yehuda. Well, 2 hours, so we didn't go into the whole discussion of Shot Zmaniot, how we measure hours, and were these 2 hours Shot Zmaniot. Let's wait on all that. We have to leave that for halacha class. It's not for tonight. But the Rishonim want to say that from this Midrash, this Midrash is going like Chachamim. It's not going like Rabbi Yehuda. If you say it's like Rabbi Yehuda, so okay. So that's why he wanted to daven Alvit so early, before nightfall. And halachically, we say you could go like Rabbi Yehuda. There's no halacha. You could do whichever way you want. Halacha says you could. We don't call the shot. You could call the shot. You could say every day I'll daven Mincha early, before an hour and a quarter before sunset. I'll daven always Mincha Gdola, what's called, in the early afternoon, like they do here in Yeshiva. And then I could always daven Alvit early. I could always daven Alvit before sunset. There is one exception that we say on Shabbos. We say, being that there is a halacha that a person is supposed to add on to the Shabbos, he's supposed to accept Shabbos early. So even if a person daven Mincha late, he daven Mincha in the second half of the afternoon, he daven Mincha in the last hour and a quarter before sunset, even so he's going like Chachamim, he's not going like Rabbi Yehuda, he's saying I could daven Mincha till nightfall. So we say he could still daven Arvit early and go like Rabbi Yehuda, even though it's tapi the sakla. He's doing two things that contradict one another. Who's the halacha like? Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda? You can't do both that contradict. So we say, yeah, in honor of Shabbos, you could do two things that contradict. In a time of need, if you're stuck, so you could do that. If a person knows on his wedding night that they're going to daven Ma'ariv when he's in the Yichudu, and he's never going to make Ma'ariv properly, so he could daven Mincha and Arvit, he could do tapi the sakla. When a person's in a pinch, he sees it's not going to work, so he could do Talti Desatli. Ordinarily, though, we say a person shouldn't do that. Choose either go like Rabbi Yehuda or like Chachamim, and because the average Minyanim, and in the average person's life, he's going to need the Dav Mincha later. That's why most people today Dav Mincha till sunset and Dav Arvit from Tzitta Kochavim. Yaakov comes to rest. We discussed on Sunday that he was poor, either because his father sent him out of his house without a penny, and we discussed that God held that against Yitzchak according to that Medrash, or because Eliphaz caught up with him and he took away all his money, and now Yaakov is coming to rest and he has nothing to rest his head on. He takes some stones. Our sages say he takes from the stones of the altar that was built for Yitzchak to be sacrificed on, and he places that either under his head, which is a little strange, or around his head to protect himself from the wild animals. Why does he think that these stones are going to protect him from animals? So if these are the stones of the Mizbeach, we know that the Mizbeach, one of the purposes of the Mizbeach is to bring peace to the world. That's why the Mizbeach can't be built from stones that were cut by metal, because metal shortens a person's life. The Mizbeach is supposed to bring peace to the world. When King David wants to build the Beis HaMikdash, the God tells him, you can't do it, your son's going to do it. So in Divrei HaYomim, Ezra elaborates, and Ezra quotes an expansion as to why God refused to have King David built the Beis HaMikdash. God says, David, you did important things in your life. You fought terrorists. You killed the enemies who wanted to destroy the Jewish people. But bottom line, you spilled blood. You killed people. The Mizbeach has to be built by someone who's a peace, a person of peace. Your son Shlomo, that's the name Shlomo, Shalom Yehi Bi'amav. It's going to be peace in his time. He's the one that's going to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. But you, even though you did important things, you can't build the Beis HaMikdash. You are a man of war. That's what it says in Divrei HaYamim. And the same thing is true with the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach has to be built in a way that we don't use swords, we don't use knives to carve out the stones of the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach has to be built from stones that are carved a different way. And the Mizbeach brings peace to the world, and some want to say that that's what Yaakov was thinking here. I need to be protected from wild animals, so I'll take the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach brings peace to the world. The Medrash says he took 12 stones, corresponding to the 12 tribes. They had a tradition that there are going to be 12 tribes. That's why Rivka, when she sees she's pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, and it's so tough, and she sees one's going to be a Rasha, she says, Lama ze anochi. Why am I going to have 12? I'm going to have to undergo 12 pregnancies like this? I can't handle this. So God said, okay, we won't have the 12 tribes from you, Rivka. It was delayed. The Yaakov, her son Yaakov, he's going to establish the 12 tribes, and he's really going to have it from four wives, not from one. So Yaakov took 12 stones, and when he awakens, he sees that the stones turned into one stone. The Medrash says each stone said, I want to serve the tzaddik. And this, the Maseilas Yesharim explains that in nature, all of nature is created to serve God. When we come to a wedding, we have a fancy wedding. Everyone spent a lot of money, got beautiful clothes, everyone came from distances to enjoy the wedding. We begin the blessings under the chuppah, when we do the blessings of marriage. We begin, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, blessed are you God, Sheakov Bara Lechvado. Everything you created, God, is in your honor. That blessing was instituted to show everything we see, the whole ta-da-da, the whole meal, everyone's fancy dress, everything is coming to honor God. You could think, ah, it's me, it's my wedding, and my suit, my tuxedo, my wife, her gal. No. It's all in honor of God. That's how we start the wedding. We're setting a tone. The first blessing is, this is all in honor of God. And the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnah says a story about an Arab sheikh that builds in the middle of a desert, a beautiful castle, and he brings his wives there, and he has his parties there, and he thinks everything's for himself. Now, God didn't create the world for Arab sheikhs to enjoy. So 100 years later, a sage comes down in that desert, and he enjoys the shade from one of the walls, the shade from the castle. The Rambam says the whole castle, the whole sheikh, all is well. God allowed that all to be there so that the sage will enjoy it one time. The world is created to serve God and to serve those who serve God. So all these stones, they all want to have a purpose in the world. That's what the Medrash is coming to illustrate. That the purpose of the stones is to serve those that serve God. So each one wants that the tzaddik should rest his head on them. And when he awakens, they all turn one, and that's a sign how the 12 tribes are going to unite from him. We're going to have mitato shlema. Avraham Avinu had two children, one isn't part of the Jewish people. Yitzchak had two children, Esav and Yaakov, so Esav isn't part of the Jewish people. But Yaakov, from Yaakov and on, everyone's part of the Jewish people. All of Yaakov's children are Jewish, and from Yaakov we have the tradition, Yisrael Shechata, a Jew, even when he sins, Yisrael is a Jew. A Jew can never uproot his Jewish identity. A Jew is a Jew forever. He could sin as much as he wants, he'll still be a Jew. This is from Yaakov and on. And this is represented to an extent by the idea that the 12 stones became one. That's it, the Jewish people are one now. He dreams and he sees a ladder. And he sees the ladder reaching heavens and angels are going up and down. First he sees angels going up, so our sages were bothered. What does it mean? In dreams, dreams correspond to reality. And in reality we dream, we think of angels as being in heaven. So why is Yaakov Avinu dreaming of angels first going up, then coming down? Should have first seen them coming down from heaven, where angels go. So our tradition is that every Jew has angels that go with him. Adam Islay Mazla. Every Jew has a mazel. Mazel, according to one understanding, is an angel that's watching over him. Our sages, when they used to go to the bathroom, they used to tell the angels, "Kabdum chubadim, wait for me. You don't enter the bathroom. I got to do what humans have to do. I'll be right out." We don't do that anymore because we're not on level that we vision angels with us. The only time we do is on Shabbos. Our sages say that Friday night, every person comes home, he has two angels with him. Good angel and a bad angel. And they look at the house, if the table's set, if the beds are set, if the house is in order, so the bad angel, the good angel blesses the man, he says, this is the way it should be next week, and the bad angel has to say, Amen, I agree. If everything's a mess, so the bad angel says, this is the way it should be next week, and the good angel has to nod his head and say, I agree. So this is a tradition we have, that's why we sing Shalom Aleichem, we welcome the Malachim to join us all. But the rest of the week, we're not on the level to recognize that Malachim are with us. But Yaakov Avinu, he was on the level. So he's about to leave Chutz La'aretz. So he envisions the Malachim that were accompanying him in Eretz Yisrael. They're going up. And new Malachim are coming with him to accompany him to Chutz La'aretz.
It's funny that they don't mention because he was still in the land. He would have eventually, he still has to travel a lot before he gets out of the land. So how come this?
So that's all unclear. It's unclear in Midrash and it's unclear in the Rishonim. Where is this whole story taking place? Even Rashi has more than one shot. What's going on here? So we have a combination of things. We want to say he's by Har HaMoriah. The Pasuk says he's by Luz, and he names it Beit El. Where is he? It says, Vayelech Harana. The Pasuk literally means he went, he got the Haran. So then we have Midrashim. He got the Haran and he went back. He got the Haran and he started going back and the Beis HaMikdash came to greet him. The Beis HaMikdash came to greet him, and where's Beit El in this whole story? So Beit El doesn't mean Beit El. It's the house of God, because it's the Beis HaMikdash, which is going to be the house of God. So we see in Chazal also had different opinions how to understand where this whole story is taking place. So I don't know, maybe he was on the border with Chutz La'aretz. We don't know. Depends on which medrash you read and how you read it. God blesses him. He tells him he's going to have the land of Israel and his children are going to flourish and the nations of the land are going to be blessed in him. That's something we discussed in the past, that it's important to look good in the eyes of other people also. People shouldn't think, I'm doing what's right and I don't care. Ideally, if we could look good in the eyes of other people, how do people speak about a person, that has a lot of weight. And the Keter Shem Tov is important. So Yaakov is given the blessing, the world is going to look fondly upon his children, and they'll use them as an example for blessing. You should be like the Jew. God promises him he won't leave him till he fulfills his promise that everything's going to work out right. We're going to see that Yaakov's still going to be scared, even though he has this promise. On the one hand, when he awakens, he feels confident, and he promises God that he's going to establish a house of worship in this place when he makes it back safely.
If he makes it back safely.
And he promises to give Meiser. He's going to give a tenth of everything to God. On the other hand, when it comes time to return, we're going to see Yaakov was scared. Why was he scared? Because even when a person has a promise from God, it's contingent on his behaving himself. We never know if we've really lived up to God's promises. And that's the difference between tzaddikim and rishon. Rishon are always confident. They always say, I have merits. God's with me. I'll be okay. Tzaddikim are always scared. They always say, maybe I wasn't right. What about this? I didn't do exactly right. I didn't have exactly the right intent. When a person's nervous, so it's not good for a system, religion spends life too nervous. But on the other hand, it's a sign that he's on a good level. A person is supposed to constantly check himself and think, Maybe I didn't live up to what I was supposed to. Even Yaakov, he has a promise from God, he's scared, saying, maybe I didn't live up to it.
What was the promise from God? Dependent on something?
So that's a discussion among the Rishonim. It seems from Chazal that God's promises are contingent on our being on that level. There is a concept of Shema Yikro Machet, that if a person sins, Chet means lacking. The term Chet literally means lacking. If a person is lacking in what he does, so then he doesn't deserve to get the promise and he doesn't get it. That promises are contingent on you do your part, I'll do my part.
But it seemed like a decree that when he spoke to Abraham and said, your kids as well, he didn't say your kids, if they do this, and this, then I'll give them the land.
So that's, even though it's unspoken, it seems understood that promises are contingent on living up to it. The Jewish people had nevuah that the same way they left Egypt with great miracles and entered the land of Israel with great miracles, in the time of the Second Temple, they were supposed to have the same great miracles entering the land of Israel. That was the prophecy. We say it in Az-Yosha. Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem, Ad Yavar Amzuka Nisa. We say twice Ad Yavar, till they pass. And our sages say this means they had a tradition from the time they left Egypt that there's going to be a second coming to the land of Israel, which is going to be as miraculous as the first coming. So the Gemara asks, what happened? In the time of Ezra, we don't see miracles like this. Where did it all go? So our sages say, yeah. It was supposed to be that way, and the Jewish people didn't live up to it. When Ezra came and said, Jews, time to go back to the land of Israel, we've been redeemed, they said, it's good in Chutzars. We don't want to go back. God says, you're not living up to your end of the deal. So I'm not doing the miracles I promised. My promise was contingent on your living up to your end of the deal.
Maybe the promise was for the third.
The Gemara seems to understand that it was for the second, yeah. Yaakov comes to the city of Haran and he sees a well in the field. He sees three groups of shepherds sitting by the well. And from that well, they're going to water their sheep. And there's a huge stone on the well. In order to access the well, you had to remove that stone. So Yaakov asks them, where are you from? They tell him he's from Haran. He asks them, do you know Lavan?
This is my problem.
Yeah.
Was Yaakov asking a question that would lead to Lashon Hara?
He's asking, is everything okay by you?
He's asking, and if they answer him truthfully, it would be Lashon Hara.
What would they say?
He's an idiot.
He didn't ask them what kind of person he was. He knew Lavan was an Arami.
Didn't he say, what type of person is he?
No. He asked them, do you know Lavan? They said, I know it. He asked them, do you know if all's well by him? He said, all's well, and here's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep.
Okay.
Doesn't say he asked them what kind of person he was.
Okay.
So then he asked them.
Okay.
Then we have to look at each commentary and understand what they said. So he told him, there's still going to be a lot of time till sunset. Why don't you give your sheep to drink and go? So they said, we can't. We can't take off the stone. We're here early. Our sages say that he's asking, why are you gathering so early? So they said, yesterday a funny thing happened. The sun set 2 hours early. We're scared it's going to happen again today. So Yaakov said, don't worry. That was a one-time thing. That was yesterday. It's not going to happen again today. So give your sheep the drink and go ahead. As they're talking, Rachel comes with the sheep. And from here we see that Lavan didn't have any sons. He only had daughters. Our sages say that Rachel and Leah were twin sisters. It says they're all in Rabbah. They were twins. So we have twin brothers, Yaakov and Esau. And they have twin cousins, Leah and Rachel. Leah and Rachel probably looked alike as well. Could be there were twins that looked alike. Identical twins. When Yaakov sees her, and he sees her with the sheep, he goes and takes off the stone from the well, as though it were just a bottle cap. An easy thing to do. It takes all the shepherds to remove it, and he takes it off easily. Our sages say this shows us how strong Yaakov was. And he gives the sheep to drink. When he sees Rachel, he kisses her and he cries. And he tells her that they're relatives, and she runs home to tell her father.
That was also a problem, right?
What?
He kisses her in public.
Oh, good question. That's a very good question. How does Yaakov kiss Rachel?
It doesn't matter either way. So you're not supposed to kiss
his cheek, something.
So the Malbim says there's a difference. Well, even if he kissed her on the forehead or the cheek,
it's still problematic.
How does he kiss a cousin he just met for the first time? And
And then he cries, right?
So the truth is, halakhically, we're not allowed to touch our cousins. A cousin who's a girl, we're not allowed to touch. An aunt, we're not allowed to touch.
Son can't even kiss his mother.
Son could kiss his mother.
An older son, no.
Son could kiss his mother and a mother.
If she's embarrassed to undress, she's old enough to be...
No. I think you're confusing different things.
No.
The father is allowed to kiss a daughter, and the son's allowed to kiss a father.
But if she's old enough where she'd be embarrassed... I don't think so.
If you want, we'll look inside. But an aunt or a cousin, there we're not allowed to touch them. So Yaakov tells Rachel, he tells her, I'm your father's brother. And ach means a brother, not really her brother. Ach means attached. We discussed that ichui means attachment. So he tells her, I'm attached to him. If he's a righteous person, I'm okay myself. And if he's a swindler, so don't worry, I'll know how to take care of him as well. And this is something we have to know, that in life, we're supposed to deal with people the way they deal with us. Shlomo HaMelech has two women come before his court, and they have all kinds of claims. So he tricks them. Yes. He says, I'm going to cut the kid in half. And one says, gee, that's a great idea. Another one says, what do you mean? Give it to her. Don't kill my baby. Shlomo says, then now we know who's the real mother. There was a court case here in Jerusalem. A woman came into court and claimed that she got a get from her husband back in Europe. So every question the rabbis would ask, she'd say, yeah, that's what happened. I got it. So they were scared that she was lying. So they made up a story. They told her, you know, when you get married, the custom is you walk around your husband 7 times. When you get divorced, they made this up. This isn't true. No one never does this. They said, when you get divorced, in order to undo it, you're supposed to walk backwards around your husband 7 times.
Did you walk backwards?
So did they do that with you in the court? So she said, yeah, of course. So they said, okay. This does the woman's make up the story. So you're supposed to do that. Our sages have a tradition. There's a discussion in the Mishnah. You give a woman to drink sometimes when she claims that she was righteous, she did nothing wrong, and her husband says, no, you went with another man. So there's a series of halachas, how you give a sota to drink. So the Mishnah has a discussion, do we do this with a woman who's a maid, a woman who's a servant? Does she also get to drink if we have a question whether she was faithful to her husband? So one opinion says yes, and they quote that it happened in Shmaya and Avtalion's time. And the opinion that disagrees says, no, they were tricking her. They were tricking her. They took some water, they put some paint in it, and they said, we're going to give you this water to drink. And you know what happens? If you weren't faithful, you're going to explode. They didn't really give her to drink. Halachically, you don't give a woman to drink. So he was claiming there was a trick. You can't bring a proof from Shmaya and Naphtali's Bezdin. They were tricking the woman. So the halacha says, you have to deal with the person the way you're scared he's going to deal with you. You don't have to be tamim. That's what the Chafetz Chaim said. Tamim tiyeh mashem elokecha. With God, you're supposed to be innocent, complete, whatever God says you do. But with the car mechanic, he tells you need a new radiator. Tell him, I want the old one. I'm bringing it to my mechanic.
The way I read it is actually, if a guy's ready to con you, you're allowed to con him back. But if he's going to be nice, you have to be nice.
You're not supposed to con, but you're supposed to protect yourself.
Right, meaning you can be as crooked as he is.
You're not supposed to be crooked, but you are supposed to be cunning and protecting yourself. So Laban hears that Yaakov came. He remembers that Yaakov's father, when he wanted a wife, Rivka, Laban's sister, so they sent a servant with 10 camels laden with all kinds of wealth and gifts. So Laban says, gee, then now the master's coming, Yaakov's coming. So he runs out, he gives him a hug. Maybe he's hiding his money on him. He gives him a kiss, maybe he's hiding jewels in his mouth. And then he says, I don't see anything, he brings him home. And he tells Laban, look, I don't got anything. He tells him the whole story. Lifas took everything. And Laban tells him, look, we're family, stick around. He sticks around for a month, and he's working that month. He's working for free, and finally Laban tells him, look, just because we're family doesn't mean you have to work for free. What do you want? Now, Laban had two daughters, Leah and Rachel, and everyone used to say, twin girls, they're twin cousins, so the older one will marry the older one, the younger one will marry the younger one. Twins for twins. And Leah would spend her time crying, praying to God, don't let me marry Esau. And Rachel was always happy-go-lucky. Now, Leah spent her time praying, and we're going to see that is Leah's strong point. In the heavens, it was decreed that Yaakov was really supposed to marry Rachel. And Rachel wasn't supposed to have children. It was supposed to be a problem. And Leah, through her prayers, merited that she's going to marry Yaakov, and she's going to marry Yaakov before Rachel does. She's the first wife, and she gets 6 of the tribes. The first six tribes are born from Leah. And in heavens it wasn't agreed that way. That was... Not the first six.
No,
you're right. Not the first six.
First
you're right. Good point. But Leah gets half the tribes. And she wasn't even supposed to be married to Yaakov. But through her prayers, through her vigilant prayers, she poured her heart out to heavens. She got there first. And because she prayed and cried so much, her eyes weren't the way they should have been. And Rachel was good looking. Yaakov loved Rachel. And he tells Lavan, I'll work for you. We got 3 more minutes, yeah?
Yeah, but we never have enough time.
Says, I'll work for 7 years for Rachel, your young daughter. He knows Lavan's a con artist. He'll say, Rachel, so he'll give Leah the name Rachel. We'll switch their names. He'll say, Rachel, your daughter, that doesn't help anything. So first he was scared he'll take a girl from the marketplace, call her Rachel. Here's Rachel after 7 years. He says, Rachel, your daughter. Scared he'll give Leah the name Rachel. So he says, your little daughter. Still didn't work. Lavan still didn't keep his word. So Lavan says, you know, better I give her to you than anyone else, so come, work. Yaakov works for 7 years and he thinks he's got a bargain for a girl like Rachel. 7 years are up, he tells Lavan, time's up. Give me my wife. And Lavan says, okay, we'll make a feast. That night, he takes Leah and he gives her, tells her, you're going in instead. Rachel hears this, and Rachel is silent. Now Yaakov was scared Lavan would trick him. He gave Rachel a sign that she should do, and through that sign, she gives him that sign, he knows it's Rachel, otherwise not. When the time comes, Rachel thinks, wait a second. If Yaakov stands under the chuppah and Leah doesn't know to give him the signs, Yaakov will call the bluff and he'll embarrass Leah.
That's
on the other hand, if Rachel lets Leah go in, she may never get Yaakov. She doesn't know that Yaakov will ever forgive her for this. She doesn't know if she'll ever get to marry her beloved. She doesn't know what'll happen. So at that time, Rachel decides, I'm not going to let my sister get a mess. And Rachel gives away these secret signs to Leah.
Which
now, we would think, Rachel, you just lost your option to be one of the Imos. Rachel, because of this, you risk losing your whole potential for building Am Yisrael. On the other hand, Rachel doesn't do these calculations. She says, I'm not allowed to let my sister get embarrassed. And you embarrass a person, it's like you killed him. So Rachel gives Leah these signs. Our sages say that had Rachel not given these signs, and had Yaakov really married Rachel, Rachel would have never had any of the tribes. When it came time for her to have Yosef and Binyamin, the only merit she had that could open the gates in heaven, that she would merit having 2 of the tribes, was the fact that God remembered, hey, she cared for her sister. So in life, sometimes we stand in situations where we say, if I do what's right, I'm going to pay such a price. God can't want me to say pay such a price. But the right thing is to do what's right. The outcome isn't our responsibility. So Rachel won't be one of the Imos. We know that when the Jewish people were taken to exile, the Jewish people had their enemies. The Arabs came and gave them salty food to eat, and then they gave them these pitchers of flasks of, that they thought were filled with wine. They were painted as though they were filled with wine, and inside there was old air that when they take that in their stomachs, they would collapse and die. And as they're traveling, they give them this salty meat, and then they give them these flasks, and people are dropping dead, and they beg their captors, take us by Kever Rachel. And they go by Rachel's grave, and in heaven the fathers, the patriarchs are coming and begging God to have mercy on Jewish people. No can do. The matriarchs, everyone's coming from Maris and Achpel and begging, Moshe's coming, Aaron's coming, no one could open the gates in heaven. And then there's a voice up in heaven. There's a voice that's crying. And God says, why are you crying? And Rachel says, I had an option to be married to Yaakov alone. I took my sister, I took in the one who's going to be my tzara. It's not going to be pleasant living with her under the same roof. It's not going to be pleasant taking in a second wife. No woman wants to have competition under the same roof with her husband. And I could take her in. So you can't handle God that the Jewish people took in another God in your temple? So it's true, they brought idols into the temple. I handled having a second wife. You can't, you can't forgive him for taking in, so to speak, a second wife, taking in another God. And that claim got us in. That claim is what saved the Jewish people at that time. So for generations, the Jewish people merited from this act. This act that Rachel said, I'm not taking any cheshbonos. My sister's going to be embarrassed. I'm going to give in, and I'm going to give her the sign. I always tell Hassan the story of the Chassan who was standing under the chuppah, and the Kala is proceeding towards him, and suddenly he thinks, what am I doing? I don't want to marry her. He's standing there under the chuppah and he's saying, gee, I don't want to go through with this. And he says, wait a second. If I walk down now, then she won't be a divorcee. She'll always be able to marry someone else. But it'll be a big embarrassment to her. So what should I do? And as he's thinking this, she's walking another step, everyone's smiling and singing, and she's proceeding. And he's thinking, true story, I heard it from the guy himself. He's thinking,
true story?
True story.
Oh, no, buddy.
And the husband's thinking, what am I doing? I don't want to marry her. So he's thinking, she's walking, another step. He's thinking, I can get out of it now. I got a few more seconds. And then he thinks and he says, you know, this is the situation Rachel is in. She could have embarrassed Leah or not embarrassed Leah. And you know what, God, look at this. Because I know how much chosim Am Yisrael got from the fact that Rachel didn't embarrass Leah. I'm not embarrassing. I'm going to marry her. And we're going to make it work. And I'm going to love her. And we're going to build a beautiful home. I always tell this to chassanim because I tell him, you should know, till the chuppah you can have cold feet.
Yeah.
It's natural for every chassan between the engagement and the marriage to suddenly think, hey, does this really make sense? Every chassan has that. That's normal. They go to the Cheder Yichud, and after they walk out of the Cheder Yichud, he himself tells me, he thought to himself, I was crazy, it was just nerves. Of course I want to marry her, she's the girl of my dreams. And he was thrilled and they lived happily ever after, whatever, I don't know, they're still alive. But the idea is that the chassan thought to himself, he said, you know, if Rachel could do it, I could do it. God made the Jewish people merit like they merited from Rachel. And we'll have to continue, maybe Thursday we'll have another class, we're out of time.